Hello, and welcome to the podcast, The Lotus Eaters. I'm joined by Carl.
Hello.
And Stelios.
Hello.
And today we'll be talking about old world Christianity is less forgiving, and the parasite industry, I love being off YouTube, and Spanish leftists being Spanish leftists. So it's going to be a shit segment. All right, let's get into the news, shall we?
You ever got, start that again. Have you guys ever heard of Fowler?
No.
Fowler?
Little place in New South Wales? I don't think there's a New North Wales. I just find that I always found the New South Wales thing so weirdly specific. I'm sure we've talked about it before. But there's a place there called Fowler, as you can see. And it's a, just a little parliamentary constituency or electoral division, as they call them, in the state of New South Wales. And I thought we'd talk a little bit about Fowler. So if you live in Fowler, do leave in the comments. Fowler mentioned.
I love that meme.
Me too, but no one's going to do that because Fowler is a very diverse electoral division in Australia.
A strong one.
Yeah. Of the entire constituency, only 40% of them were born in Australia. 60% first-generation immigrant. 71% of which, of just the entire population, had both parents born overseas. So 60% first-generation, but also a significant percentage second-generation. The overall, apparently, the general percentage of all Australians with both parents born overseas is 47%. Seems crazy to me. But okay.
Well, they have really high immigration.
Yeah, I know. So do we, but, you know, I guess old world country, new world country. So the point is there were 66,978 people in Fowler who were reported being in the labor force. Only half of those are employed full time.
God, I love diversity.
27% are employed part-time, and the rest are unemployed or not seeking work. 10% register, 10.5% are unemployed, so seeking work. This is, of course, nearly double the new stout work, the rest of the figure for New South Wales.
It's still better than Birmingham.
It is way better than Birmingham. It's true. It's true. It is way better.
I mean, I'm seeing on this screen here that the people there are Vietnamese and Chinese, the largest ethnic groups.
Yeah, but that's only sort of like 15% of them, something. So it's not that many. The point is, it's a very diverse little melting pot. And so the reason that I'm talking about Fowler, of course, in New South Wales, is the consequences of diversity. There was a stabbing of a priest as he was live streaming. I'm not going to show you the video, obviously, because it's not very nice to watch. But it's not, I mean, you don't see anything, but it's pretty horrific either way. This priest is just there on the live stream talking about God from the Christian perspective, because he is an Orthodox priest. And someone just comes up and starts stabbing him in the face and in the hands and wherever else till the congregation get hold of him. I'd never heard of this guy, but apparently he's pretty popular on social media. This was a Syrian Orthodox bishop, Mari Emmanuel, who was preaching at Christ the Good Shepherd Church in Wakeley in Sydney's West on Monday, just after 7 p.m., when a man dressed in a dark hoodie walked up to the altar and allegedly stabbed him multiple times.
One thing to say here is that it's really good that the congregation actually did something about it.
Oh, yeah.
They didn't just have their phones.
We'll talk about what the congregation did about this. Because what this really does, this entire, the consequence of this, is really highlight the difference in Western Christianity to Eastern Christianity. It's very different. Dai Li, the MP for Fowler, is obviously very worried about the community tension. I thought we'd just watch.
Quite a bit to get through, isn't it?
Just a little bit.
It's not every day you're out, the gathering last night and the injuries of the police. I don't know if the declaration will help or hinder our community. And
what
I'm
makes
concerned.
You say that? What are your concerns around that?
My concern is obviously, concern is in terms of our multi-faith communities here. And that
multi-faith
will heightened the tension that obviously we are for months now experiencing overseas, and this is just, and it's just going to add to it. Mm-hmm. So I fear, and I hope that the Premier and that the police commissioner know what they're doing, They really know what they're doing when they're declaring this. And I hope that this will allow them to investigate the incident as quickly as possible. And
okay, so it is a multi-faith community, as in that's got deep underlying tensions. So what this is a series of small ethnic enclaves that hate each other.
Really?
I know, really.
The Hindus and the Christians hate each other?
Who could have known that this would be the case?
The Taoists and the Christians hate each other?
But the point is, you can tell that she's, we'll get to who it is, you can tell that she's terrified, right? Because she is expecting massive outbreaks of ethnic violence to come from this event. That's what she's most afraid of, which is exactly, she sounds exactly the same as our politicians when something like that happens and they're like, oh God, please just de-escalate, because this is actually a tinderbox and that was a spark. So not good. So let's talk about the suspect. Well, it was a 16-year-old boy. So we don't know his name.
16.
Yep. 16 years old. He'd been his teenager had been previously arrested for knife crimes. He was found in possession of a flick knife and charged with being armed with intent to commit an indictable offense, stalking and or intimidation, and recklessly destroying or damaging property. He was involved in an incident with a bunch of other teenage boys. So ascending their best is the way to remember that. But he was dismissed on a good behavior bond. So it's like, no, you're a good lad, really. Get out of here, you scamp. It's just a flick knife. They didn't take it seriously. And he was just let off for whatever he'd done. And he was, quote, not suspected to have been radicalized.
Come on.
He's not on a terrorist watch list.
Is he one of Joe Biden's kids? How do you just get away with that?
That's a great question, because like when you actually see the video of him after he was captured, you see him smirking as he's being held down, which is just a bit infuriating.
He was shouting Allahu Akbar.
Yeah, like spoiler alert, I guess.
More Taoist.
I should have made sure. So he's shouting Allahu Akbar and he's smirking after stabbing a 51-year-old Christian priest. Okay. So now, in the West, we would say, well, can't be helped. He's not a real Muslim.
Actually, he's mentally ill. Don't worry about it.
He's just mentally ill. We're not going to look back in anger. I'm sure he's deeply ashamed of his actions.
In fact, if we just bring more Muslims in, they won't feel the need to stab us.
And that's the Western perspective. But the Assyrian Orthodox Church has something of the old world blood in them still, because they were like, yeah, we do look back in anger, actually. We look back in apoplectic rage. And so someone cut his fingers off.
Ooh. Pretty cool.
I didn't know that.
Pretty old world. It's not entirely clear who did this. The police chief did not clarify whether the teen had severed his own fingers or if it had been done to him.
Hillary Clinton style.
Yeah.
He cut his own fingers off. You see, he had a knife in the video.
Yeah, and there we go. And obviously he wasn't holding the handle. Obviously he was holding the blade and stabbing with the handle. I'm going to guess he didn't cut his own fingers off. Because,
funnily enough, none of the congregation are saying who might have done it.
Yeah, there are pictures going around. It's literally this. Like,
why are they saying allegedly?
Legal reasons, probably.
Okay.
I mean, he's on video doing it, but anyway. So they are looking back in anger, actually. They were quite angry. And so after this happened, they went out into the streets, literally thousands of them, and started chanting, bring him out to us.
What you going to do?
Yeah, why do you want him to come out, guys?
I'm going to shake his hand. There's not much of it left.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, very much old world mentality. The community has been wronged by a criminal, and they know that the law is not going to sufficiently deliver the catharsis of revenge upon him. And so they wish to have him brought out into the street, where I'm sure they would just ask him some pressing questions.
Was it you who did it?
It was allegedly you who did it, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You know, that's what all the media is saying.
Raise both your hands if you didn't do it.
So
never mind.
The point is, this old world Middle Eastern Christian community has something of the old world still in them. Unlike the new world, who say, yep, good point, you did just, you know, blow up a church or whatever, or a hospital or whatever, or a concert for the kids. We won't look back in anger. There was a vigil outside the hospital, and the priest who is recovering, nothing mortal, which is good. Priest is recovering, the bishop, sorry, who's recovering, told them all to go home, everything's fine, he'll survive. So that's good. What?
Did he say anything like justice was served or?
Not to my knowledge.
No.
But I thought it might be worth asking as well, why did this smirking 16-year-old try to murder a Christian bishop? And it turns out that the bishop himself is a popular TikTok star, beloved by his community. Bishop Mari Emmanuel. He's got hundreds of thousands of followers on TikTok and YouTube, and streams his live streams because he's a mildly controversial figure. And the media unearthed, I guess you call it, they just went through his YouTube channel and TikToks and found him saying, base things, to be honest. Based Assyrian bishops. Like, yeah, no. You know what? Actually, lockdowns are slavery. Mass slavery. The threat of COVID was exaggerated, says one Orthodox bishop. And he's also been mildly critical of Islam, which, again,
mildly
critical of Islam, which may have something to do with it. This wasn't...
This article, actually, just look at this for a bit. Mm-hmm. Stabbed church leader, critical of Islam, other faiths.
Yeah, and so...
What kind of title is this?
Well, a lot of people notice that the media...
Religious man believes in his own faith. It's weird. What should we do?
Well, he's not multicultural, right? He's not buying into the melting pot. Because, of course, what the Premier of New South Wales did was call all of the community leaders. So we got the Buddhists, the Muslims, the Hindus, the Christians, the Orthodox Christians, the Catholics. And he's like, look, guys, we need to all be on the same page here. And it's like... they were just like, well, hang on a second. This is a religious... question anyway, but what the hell are the Buddhists here for? What do we do? You know, what are you talking about? We're not in favor of stabbing priests in the middle of the church. What's going on here? But you know, this no. We've all got to agree. No,
agree on what? The whole reason we're even different is because we don't agree on anything.
We've got to agree on the liberal premise of tolerance. That's what we all have to agree on.
Most of us aren't liberals.
yep, that's true. But they view themselves as the chessboard on which these things can play out.
I have to note that this is only for the Christians. It's not for the other side, because the other side isn't multicultural either.
That just makes me think that it's state mandated.
It's a double standard.
I don't know. I don't know if I'd say.
Which is, you know, someone with a conviction who's like, yes, I believe in Christianity.
Yeah, no.
If that's a story, if that's an article you can write.
They're not asking them to agree on... tenets of faith, obviously. They're asking them to agree that actually we all have to be polite and tolerant and not stab each other in churches or anywhere else.
Tenet of faith to me.
Well, that's because it is. But the point being, the Assyrians are a persecuted minority in the Middle East because they're Christian. They're almost every Assyrian is a Christian at this point. They're not quite like they were back when I enjoy reading about them. And they've faced a significant amount of persecution from the Muslims. And so this looks like more persecution from the Muslims coming to the new world from the old to these people. Again, it was spoiled already, but yes, this was a terrorist attack because it was clearly done for ideological, religious ideological reasons. And so the authorities, the Australian police were like, yes, okay, fair enough. We're satisfied that this is a case of religious extremism. I'm not going to say the religion. You know, we can't say the religion. Literally, authorities repeatedly declined to state the religion of the alleged attacker.
But it was an Islamic religion.
But it was a Muslim. Like, literally moments away from the Kanye West meme. And it's just, okay, like, we know it was, because he literally went up to them and said, if the bishop didn't get involved in my religion, if he hadn't spoken about my prophet, I wouldn't have come here. He just spoke about his own religion. I wouldn't have come and yelled, Allahu Akbar. It's like, look, you don't have to pretend that we, you know, it's that we don't know. We know. Everyone knows. This is why he did this. This is something
that has happened before. And so, yeah, so that's the state of things. So the interesting thing I found from this was a lot of Western Christians were like, can we not have a Christianity like this? Can we not have a Christianity that's got a bit of balls? It's just like, you know what? You guys don't care. Bring them out to us.
They used to have good balls. I mean, all through Catholic Europe, there were some pretty good balls.
There were.
Protestant Reformation had some pretty good balls when burning Catholics.
Yep.
For very good reasons.
Fair.
How many times did we switch religion in England? About like 17 or something?
Oh, I don't know, but quite a few.
Mad amount.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And every time we did it, we had a good bonfire with each other.
Yeah. I mean, that's literally why we have bonfire night, because burning Catholic.
Yeah.
Literally what it is.
National holiday in England is burning Catholics.
Interestingly, for the last 400 years.
When it comes to local Muslim blows up kids, no bonfire night for that one. Okay.
Weird. What do you think of all this, Stelios?
What should I say? Well, what I wanted to say before is that, you know, you see all these videos with children fighting and people fighting, and they just sit there and, you know, they don't protect the victim of the attack.
Yeah.
Well, what I meant before was that it's a good thing that they saved the priest from the attacker.
Yeah, yeah, that's fantastic.
I just think that the main people who are responsible for this is obviously the people who are, you know, spreading out ideologies, who just say go and, you know, just kill people just because they slightly differ from you. But the main thing I get from this is that the West has an allergy to rule of law, and traditional concepts like the concept of the rule of law has now come to be seen for some reason as a sort of harsh thing of the past, a past that should be forgotten. And basically we are living in societies that will completely disintegrate unless there is a kind of sense in just saying that basic laws should be applied.
In what way are you saying this?
Well, there is an obvious double standard. There's an obvious double standard when you have communities, for instance, of people who literally go and say that we don't respect your rules and we want to change your rules, your culture, all your institutions. And the response is very relaxed. I think that this is basically not upholding the rule of law. So I think it's basically just double standards. All the standards, there are very strict standards that are applied to native Western populations.
Yeah.
But the same standards aren't applied to others.
But moreover, I think it speaks to the lack of understanding that the native Western populations have of other populations around the world. Like, for example, I mean, the reason the Western Christians are like, oh my God, why doesn't our community act this way? It's because they're not like us.
You know, and this like, is...
Sorry.
This is something that, you know, people should bear in mind, especially politicians, that it's just mathematically inevitable. If in a room you just deprive all the oxygen, right now, all of us, just mathematically, it's going to be necessary. We're going to gasp for oxygen. It just happens. If there is no rule of law, we'll have things like that.
But I think that the politicians at the beginning, they are most afraid that the rule of law will break down. Because it looks like actually it's quite a tenuous thing in the melting pot, right? The groups themselves don't really respect the law, which is why they're like, no, bring him out to us. We're gonna deal with him Assyrian style.
I think in some cases it already doesn't exist. They just make self-interested judgments. So for instance, you have regularly politicians who may live in neighborhoods that haven't been, let's say, obviously affected. They have the privilege of saying, well, nothing has really happened.
Yeah, but I think it's not that. I think they are afraid. And I mean, I watched a couple of these news reports with the politicians, and they had a palpable sense of dread on them when they were talking about this. They were like, she's like, look, I really just hope he does a sensible thing. And just, you know, they know that what they're standing on is essentially an unexploded volcano.
They're not protected.
It's not even that. Like, it's more than that. It's we have allowed in a load of people who are very ethnically particular. They're very connected to their own ancestry and heritage, and they actually bring these ancient grievances against the others here. And so now we're sat on this, because I mean, like, these borders would have been very severely enforced.
Yes.
Where they came from. You know, it's like, okay, you're the Muslim kid, you don't get down.
Well, that's literally the argument of why some are not taken back.
Sure, but the point being, to bring them into like essentially the social contract and say, right, so now we're all just going to follow the same rules and everyone will get along, and this is what tolerance is like, you can see that the politicians are realizing, hang on a second, that's really, really thin on top of what is actually really deep ethnic hatreds. And I mean, these guys would just kill him in the street.
What is absolutely contradictory is that, you know, you have the argument that they are literally viewing human beings with that way, by abstracting community.
Yeah.
Because in any community, you get born, you're born into. You get acculturated in it. You get molded by its norms.
Yeah.
So you can't just change a position in the map and all that influence goes away.
Yeah. And also, of course, people move to where people like them are, because why wouldn't you? It's just convenient, if nothing else.
What benefits are.
But this I just thought was a really good example of why multiculturalism doesn't really work, actually, because the liberal administrators on top of it are just terrified that there's going to be mass bloodshed in the streets of New South Wales, where, you know...
That's an admission that they lost control of the state.
Yeah. It's an admission that this method of forming a society doesn't work. You know, I mean, you know, only half the people there, two-thirds at the most, are sort of taxpayers. They hate each other. They're genuinely afraid of, you know, what will happen to the Muslim community after this, Callum, is the question on their minds, because they're worried that there will be some sort of pogrom or something like that, because there are people from the old world.
Pogrom.
Sorry?
Like a crusade.
Well, no, the Orthodox Church never participated in the crusades.
Oh, cringe.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, they were totally against that.
I thought the Byzantines worked with us. But
They did work with us, but politically, not religiously.
I mean, 1204 wasn't particularly the best year.
No.
I mean, it was kind of a deal breaker.
Constantinople.
I'm just saying, it's a major event.
That's the Venetians. I blame the Venetians for that. It was the Venetians who did that.
They're not real Catholics. Get rid of them.
I'm not saying they're in Byzantium.
I'm not saying they're real. They can be real Catholics. I'm a black Catholic. I'm an Englishman.
I mean, at the time, if you're a crusader.
Yeah.
Everyone was Catholic.
But the Venetians were definitely the Doge of Venice, was definitely up to his old tricks there. But the point being, the Orthodox went into the Crusades. But this is the thing. Like, this is just one, again, and this is the latest example. I mean, there have been like 3 stabbings in Sydney in the past like 3 days. It's really bad. And so this is just the example. If you have a culture in which there's, say, homogenous religious sentiment, then this sort of thing doesn't happen. This is explicitly because the bishop himself, as you said, believed in his own faith and decided to say that and said, look, I don't believe in that faith. And so the old world attitude of, well, this guy doesn't believe in my faith. I go, this just comes out. And the Western liberals are just like, hang on a second, I'm not supposed to do that. It's like, well, no, that's what they do. That's what they've always done. That's why you have the sort of settlement elsewhere that you don't have in the West. In fact, that's what we used to do. Why did you think this would be such an easy ride? You know, but we've got these rules. They don't care about your rules. You know, you didn't have you caring about the rules as being one of the prerequisites for them to be able to form an ethnic enclave of their old world community. You never brought that up.
I think the current state is very, in a sense, paternalist or maternalist for some people.
Maternalist. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So they literally view their protected minorities as, you know, children who will eventually learn.
Hmm.
Just that's not the case.
No.
Stop doing this.
And they will harbor these grievances forever. So you should have picked your minority group and said, right, we've got to judge immigration based on what we're choosing. Because it's like, oh, we'll just bring everyone in and everyone will just live in the happy rainbow united colors of Benison future. It's like, no. I mean, that's just the most naive thing I've ever heard. And we see it every goddamn day. And I mean, it was in 2011 that Angela Merkel was like, yeah, multiculturalism's failed. And in the year of our Lord, 2024, we're still dealing with the failure of multiculturalism.
Yeah.
And nothing will ever be done about it. But anyway, just as a quick thing, I'm really, really enjoying the response of the Orthodox Assyrian Church. It's more robust than others. I guess I'll leave that there.
A lot of people in the chat were going, I'm Stumpticus. So that's why I was losing it. Right. Let's talk about the parasite industry, shall we?
Oh, go on.
Well, I know it's an old-timey job. Once upon a time, you'd have leeches, but these days, I'm talking in the corporate sense, of course.
Are you dissing leeches?
Well, leeches are pretty good.
Leeches were cutting-edge medical technology for 1,000 years.
What, do you work for leech companies now?
No. I just...
Use promo code Lotus Eaters to buy your leeches at the leech farm.
I just think there are far worse parasites that we could have used as an example.
Okay, fine.
Such as leftists.
Tapeworms. Yeah. Right. So you may remember this. Spoken about this quite a lot. As you can see, it's this goddamn Bloomberg article where they advertise that corporate America has gotten rid of white people. We finally did it, boys. And this is the S&P 100. It's the 100 biggest American companies. Yep. They have 300,000 new jobs, and 98.4% went to the Browns, whereas the whites got 6% there because they're less important. Why? Because
so can we go back up to that previous one?
Which one?
The one above.
One above that?
Yeah. All right. There we go. Right, this one. So that's interesting how the blacks are massively overrepresented there.
Oh, everyone wants them. They're like the newest trading card.
Right, right, okay.
They're in fashion because of George Floyd, which the comparisons there were.
I suppose they would be, wouldn't they? Yeah.
Weird to make, but there we are. But the argument was, because I mean, obviously this is morally evil. I mean, this is how deep this goes. They show you it's the executives, whites getting screwed, managers even more screwed, professionals even more screwed, less senior roles massively screwed. Like you're just not being hired anywhere near the percentage you are in the country because you're the wrong skin tone. Sucks.
Yeah, it's just literally racial discrimination.
This is pretty morally evil. This is the thing that the biggest American companies, so top 100, which of course it's an exponential to how much the economy you represent, how you get. It's a massive chunk of the American economy is just actively anti-white. That's how things are. But it was justified, not just on moral lines of kill whitey. There were good arguments against it as well, such as, well, it'll make more money.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if you guys have ever seen these.
If that's the case, why did it need racial discrimination in the first place? Why wouldn't the companies whose sole job in law is to make more money not be like, well, why would we hire the white guys if they make less money than the Browns?
Because equity.
But the incentive would have already been there to hire the Browns anyway.
Look, white people love money, but not as much as they hate brown people.
I guess that must be the only answer we can come to.
Well, that was the one loads of different companies came to. So this is a company here called McKinsey.
Yeah.
And as you can see, this is their article, Diversity Matters Even More, the case for holistic impact. And they have a billion words and endless time to write the good old crap.
Yeah.
And they're just like, look, trust me. I mean, there's a graph in here where they're just like, look, diversity equals more money. And it's represented here. The dark mode makes it a bit hard to read. But they're showing you that women, browns, more of them equals more chance you won't fail. Trust us. It's not very comprehensive research. But I remember at university, this was quite common as well.
Yep.
To be told about how, if we have diverse groups, they might have different experiences, which means we'll get more markets and more money. And it's endless, as you can see here. It just goes on and on, on and on. And that's just one thing.
Did it work?
Rather crap. Delivering through diversity. This is their long-term goals for America. They're investing millions here into diversity.
You know what also works? Just picking a very diverse brand ambassador. I'm sure that works economically speaking.
It seems to be one of the options. The last one here is just diversity wins, how inclusion matters, in which they're just arguing that we now have made America diverse, so trust me, it's better. That's all this is.
Oh, okay.
Now, the whole reason I show you this stupid-ass company and their endless a billion words on diversity is because this is every company.
Hmm.
Every bloody company is like this. I mean, Amazon's got millions invested into the diversity box to the point that they were arguing, what was it, fat acceptance of their staff.
Yeah.
Do you remember this?
The fatter your staff are, the more money you make.
No. That's a good argument. We'll get new markets of fat guys.
I could... you don't need to be fat to sell food to fat people. Like, I think a thin person can do that.
There's fat guys who are eating food and be like, well, I only go to the restaurants that have fat people running them.
I've heard the rationale, because the rationale is that, you know, you don't go and eat the food of someone who doesn't even have it.
Never trust a skinny chef.
Yeah.
The fat community is...
Why would you trust a skinny chef?
Yeah.
Well, that's a fair point.
So there's they're basically just gloating here, like, haha, we got away with it. We made America more diverse.
But they also get paid for it.
Yeah, they also get paid for all this crap. And, the news is, it didn't work.
Oh, really? I can't believe it. I can't believe that after 100 years of capitalism, they weren't just like, it turns out that just hiring Browns because they're Brown wasn't the profitable thing to do. So, I mean, again, why wouldn't they have done it before? Just racism. Just like, yeah, I do love money, says billionaire fat cat, but I just hate them Browns. It's like, no, that's not what they think.
I'm just thinking, if this argument was ever true, that you need to do a racism and have a workforce of entirely Brown people, I can think of one industry in American history that should have been shitting money. just
yeah, all those arguments like, well, the industrial North just outpaced the South, so the South was doomed to lose. Well, okay, why was it? It's not that profitable then, is it? Anyway.
Have a Brown workforce, turns out slavery doesn't pay. It's a myth. Local corporation found out. So this is the Times. This is a major writing outlet. Diversity does not improve financial performance, report finds. And this is a longstanding claim by McKinsey, as you saw there, and their corporate executive team. And, another group decided they would try and replicate their studies, showing that diversity equaled more money.
Sorry, just a quick thing on this. That's a really damning headline.
Right? Doesn't work.
It's just damning. It's just... Because, I mean, like...
Well, it's also not surprising. Like,
no, but...
No one was really stupid enough to think, more Brown people equals more money.
But...
Operation Hire the... it's just mad.
But the inverse of this is more Brown people equals less money. Right?
Not quite.
Right.
Okay. Here's the details. The authors said they tried to replicate the McKinsey work, but found no statistical significant difference between the likelihood of financial outperformance between businesses that had diverse leaderships and those without.
Right.
Because, of course, all of those companies from the start in their senior leadership team, they hired Browns because they were Brown and nothing else. They're literally just trading cards.
Yeah.
I've got a couple of them. Would you like a couple of them? We could trade people.
I mean, what are the stats on them?
I don't know. Well, I'll give you a 40 for the whites and 60 for the blacks.
You know what is interesting about it? It's again, the issue of meritocracy.
Yeah,
we are so much bombarded by people who are saying that, you know, it doesn't matter, merit doesn't matter, the individual doesn't matter, how much they work doesn't matter. Well, it matters.
Well, I think the reality is that these people who were hired as diversity hires don't really do anything and get paid to be there. That seems to be how they're actually dealt with. Remember,
pandered to.
Yeah, who was that stupid lady who worked for the BBC who was getting paid $250,000 to do nothing? Miss Sarpong.
Oh yeah. She did 3-day week or something. As a diversity ambassador or something like that.
Her achievement of working 3 days a week was that there was going to be a conference at the end of the year where a bunch of people were going to congratulate them on being Brown. $250,000 for that. I think these people were just hired for that purpose. Say, I've got one of them.
Tokenism, yes.
Just to give you an idea, there have been diversity officers in West Virginia, especially when it comes to education, who were getting around close to about $1 million just to draft a report that says, you know, diversity is a strength. You know, they didn't even...
I'll do that for $500,000.
Yeah.
You know.
So anyway, they asked McKinsey, because of course, after that organization there that had been touting for years about how more Browns equals more money didn't work, they responded by saying that their studies had shown that companies have a more diverse leadership teams are more successful, and they are driving real business results. They couldn't say what results because it wasn't money, because it didn't work. They tried to replicate the same study. The data's just not there.
But no. Callum. We're getting results. These are not results that are tangible financial results. These are results that are based on DEI and Bridge, whatever it's called now. It's, you know, look.
My melanin score.
Yeah, exactly. exactly. Our results are conceptual and in the melanin sphere, not in the yellow, gold, green sphere that you might care about. As a white man.
Yeah. So the paper that's responding to McKinsey, they decided to actually take a look at the S&P 500, so they expanded it to the next 400 companies to get a better sample. And they just couldn't replicate the same results. Just wasn't there. They said their test found no statistical significant relations between ethnic diversity of executives and profits, sales growth, gross margins, return on assets, return on equity, and total shareholder return over the period 2015 to 2019. So literally, it doesn't work. They then went on to write that their air findings don't necessarily show that diversity doesn't make more money, which doesn't make sense because that's the claim. You investigated it, found that it didn't. But then they give this weird line where they're just like, well, we don't disprove that more Browns could equal more money. We just haven't found the Higgs boson yet.
Well, no. Are they suggesting that it makes no difference at all?
Their evidence says it makes basically no difference. But then they write, at the end of their study, they write, by the way, we don't know if, maybe you could hire more Browns and that would make more money.
Oh, yeah.
Which just screams of fear.
I mean, yeah, it absolutely does. They should have just made the moral argument from the start.
You would think.
Yeah.
To be fair, they are trying to make a statistical analysis.
I know. But that was clearly not the way to go.
Yeah. So then they're right at the end of it. Nor do they speak to any social or moral contributions that racial ethnic diversity in the US executives provide. Ah, yes, no more money, but I've got so much more moral contributions from my token black. Such research is worthwhile and important, they write, and we hope that it will be undertaken.
Oh, that's amazing.
Immaterial capital.
It is, but what I love about it is that the source of morality is proximity to Browns.
Mm-hmm.
That's how the good people.
So, you know, if as long as you're always within 15 feet of a brown person,
yeah,
you're Jesus.
Yeah. I mean, thankfully in Swindon, that's not a problem.
You can punch as many babies as you like. You're still around brown people. So you're all right. You're a good guy.
Amazing.
Yeah. I kind of think that the people writing that live in fear because, you know, here's the thing. Here's the article, right?
Yeah, they do live in fear. Yeah.
Why would you write that at the end? Why would you be like, well, clearly hiring browns makes no difference? But, you know, we haven't mentioned the moral contributions of hiring Browns.
No. Think about your guilds, right, with the Christians. So look, we were worried this was going to destroy the profitability of the company. It hasn't. So we have the best of all worlds. We've got the money we were making before and proximity to Browns.
Yeah.
So we've got, you know, finance and morals.
So I take a look at their numbers because they said don't matter.
Oh, yeah.
Right. So they said, we find a 54% of S&P 500 firms in the top executive race ethnicity ranked quartile have a positive industry adjusted EBIT margin. This is their measurement.
Yeah.
Whereas those at the bottom quartile was 51.2%, meaning there's a difference of 2.8%
right.
chance of success, which is not statistically significant because the error margin was
6%. Right.
So they just put the chalk up as nothing, right?
Yeah.
But then you look at the graph. There's the graph. Do you see the trend line? Because I sure don't. There's just nothing. It's just not data. But yeah, there's a diversity plotted against profitability, and it's just squiggles. So this is what I mean by a parasitic industry here.
Yeah.
Where you have nothing. Like, I remember seeing, I wonder if John can pull this up, actually. Load up a tab and write in chicken academic paper. Because I want to show this absolute joke that people did back in the day, which is they decided they were going to see if peer-reviewed journals were any good. It's their first link there. Perfect. In which they decided they would write a chicken paper, which is...
Every word is just chicken.
If we get this back on screen, it'd zoom in a little bit. The title is Chicken, Chicken, Chicken. Chicken, Chicken. It's from Doug here, University of Washington.
Doug Chicker Zongler.
Yeah.
That's a good Zongler. Point. Chicken in, chicken, 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 then chicken out.
If you compromise chicken with chicken, you end up with chicken.
Yeah.
You recycle the chicken.
I can see how this got... I mean, technically, it's not wrong.
I love that. Chicken, chicken, 90% chicken, chicken. Chicken, chicken, 1987 chicken, chicken. And this goes on and on. There's graphs.
Yeah.
Look at this graph.
Yeah, good point.
We've got data points.
Yeah, chicken ratios.
Yeah, we've got, you know, some flow graphs here. Chicken, chicken, chicken. Yeah, chicken, CCC, CCC, and equals chicken, chicken. Here's some algebra.
True.
You also see some chicken equations?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, we got them. Don't worry about that. Then we got some more graphs.
Chicken, sigma over chicken equals chicken.
And I want to go back to that.
Yeah.
What is this? This is a waste of my time. This is a piss take. You're sitting this on an industry whose ultimate purpose is to argue that Browns equals more money. And then you did your research and ended up with this scatter graph. I mean, it looks like someone's been shooting a shotgun or something. It's just silly. So there we are. But I mean, everyone knows this industry is bullshit. It's just complete parasitic. But I wanted to make a human case now. We'll just go real close.
Just before we go on, I think the people who run these industries should feel pretty good about themselves, right? Not the chicken one. The other industry.
Doug did pretty good work.
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. I appreciate chicken as much as the next man. But because they must be like, well, look, what this really tells us is that we can just select people for arbitrary characteristics rather than for expertise and skills and knowledge and experience and things like this. And the institution itself is so well managed, so well structured, that the institution doesn't actually change we still make the same amount of profit at the end of it. That's a well-constructed institution.
Yeah, for how long?
Well, no, I'm not saying forever.
Because in the time period they're talking, they only actually hired those people to be diversity tokens.
Yeah.
Whereas the intro article there, that's obviously after George Floyd. So yeah. This research went to 2019.
Sure.
So post-George Floyd, if you replace the entire institution with brown people, they're brown.
I'm just saying that the people who made the institution should feel good about themselves.
Yeah.
Do what they're supposed to.
Sure, it'll go well in the S&P 500, which...
forever.
Yes. Graph just go up. But...
it doesn't actually. It's just a flat line. I mean, anyway, moving on.
But I just wanted to show at a very human level what's going on because I saw this. This blew up. And this is Carl over here. Now, Carl has posted that he boarded a flight in the early morning wearing his MIT jacket. As you can see there, it's got a little MIT.
Yep.
The guy next to him is, what does he call him? The seatmate? Weird. He says, he says basketball. And he says, no, engineering.
Look at the age of the guy. Oh, you look like a basketball player. Sorry, how old does he look?
Yeah, obviously stupid.
He how says, tall is he?
Well, yeah, what prompted him to think that I was doing basketball? And he posts a picture of himself. And obviously the point being, I'm a black man. He thinks I play basketball because I'm black.
Oh, no, the oppression.
The racism never ends. Mm. I will find more of it. Trust me. And the reason this blew up, because otherwise it would have just been that, right? Is people checked out his LinkedIn.
And does he have basketball on it?
he's never done basketball. So, I mean, you got a case there. But as you can see, it's got to be a hint. So he did actually train as an engineer. We'll get to that in a minute. His full-time job, though, is not engineering.
He's a basketball coach.
No, it's not basketball. It's got nothing to do with basketball.
What is he doing at his spare time?
He's vice president for equity and inclusion at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology.
No, I do engineering. Oh, do you really?
Social engineering.
Yes. Yeah. Do you really?
I mean, people were asking, why didn't you turn to this man who assumed because you're black, you do basketball? And
no,
say,
I'm a diversity hire.
No, because I'm black, I do diversity hiring. Because that would have been more embarrassing, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would. Yeah.
And if you see the third one there, senior vice provost and chief inclusion officer and professor of THR practice.
Whatever that means.
Yeah. But he, practice.
But I mentioned he did actually do some training. So he did a master's.
Has he misspelled that? Anyway, sorry.
I don't know.
Probably is diversity hire.
Maybe it's initials.
So he did a master's degree in material science and engineering. He did do four years and then a master's. So he did 5 years of engineering, material science. He did do that. And he did do some engineering roles, as you can see here with his experience. He was the executive director for National Society of Black Engineers. Right. Executive director MIT Engineering Outreach Programs. Another one of his jobs. Okay. And the last one being national chairperson of the National Society of Black Engineers. So his role in engineering was to be black. So he did do the engineering degree, but then used it just to be a black man. That was it. I also can't get over, how does the National Society of Black Engineers have an N as its logo? But that's a whole other question.
I mean, I can't even imagine, like, I'm professionally white. Yeah, I'm just the white engineer who does the National Society of White Engineers. I was the senior white engineer advisor, and now I've become the white engineer diversity officer who hires other white engineers.
There's another one there. Senior vice president of the United Negro College Fund. Really? That's the thing. He did the master's, right? And you would have thought a normal human being, even
you'd
though
you'd have done engineering with that engineering knowledge.
Even if you're getting pigeonholed as the black engineer.
Like, yeah.
Whatever, make it your logo.
Yeah, I can still, I can still at least make things.
He then went on to do an educational degree in racial identity for 6 years. He actually spent more time studying racial identity professionally at a college
than engineering.
Engineering, and has, of course, ever since never worked in engineering, always worked in racial identity. That's actually his entire career.
That's actually amazing, to be honest.
It's hilarious.
It's amazing that the system can sustain people like this.
Because he went to university, like you can see here, in the 80s. And then through the 80s, did the engineering. And then the 2000s, did the racial identity degree.
Right.
Fantastic. And then ever since, so for like 20-odd years, he's just been working as a professional black man.
I love that he had to go to Harvard. Well, I've got to learn how to be a black man.
I don't want to be bad or something. Is there a 15-year gap?
I think there's a lot more if you click on more experiences. So that would answer your question.
Okay.
But the point being, that's what this man did, and why he's a bit of a joke. But obviously, the incentives are what they are. This is why it's a parasitical institution, because here's a material scientist. So if you did a material science engineer degree, what would be your average salary? Apparently, it's about $78,000.
Not terrible.
But if you're a vice president, and he is, of diversity and inclusion at MIT, it's 200 grand.
Oh.
Median 200 grand.
See, now this explains everything. I mean, you're just an idiot. Like, you're there going, well, don't you want the respect of having been an engineer and made things? Like, no, I want the money that they're going to give me because I'm a black man.
Professional black man, 200 grand a year.
I think that's totally rational, totally lucid. I would have done the same thing.
I mean, sort of, you know, someone's done well.
Yeah.
You have indeed.
I'm going to get three times the salary just by being black.
You probably get paid more than most basketball players, let's be honest, as well. So there's that.
Possibly, yeah.
So, yeah, don't really know what to do with this, but I just find it funny how every single day of the year I'm able to find more and more evidence about how parasitical this whole thing is.
Yeah, it's not exactly bringing value, is it?
No, just pure extraction.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's...
I respect the hustle, to be honest. But if I could get paid 200 grand a year to be the professional white guy in the room, sure, I'd do it. It's 200 grand.
Good money.
Yeah, it's good
looking
money.
For employees. Right to lotusheaters.com. Yeah.
You just need a white guy to just turn up and be like, yeah, I do white studies and I'm a white guy. I'm professional. I'll do it.
Right.
Yeah, it's not my first choice of career, but that's a lot of money.
A professional white guy. I'll never dance. Don't worry.
Yeah, yeah. I'm polite. I drink tea. You know, I'm just saying. Anyway.
Right. Hello and welcome to the podcast of the Freddy Eaters. Today, no. Millet turns out to have been right. He was very prophetic. He tried to warn us. He wasn't just metaphorical. I thought he was just metaphorical. Turns out he was way more literal than we thought he was. Let's remember this lovely clip.
Al zurdo de mierda no le podés dar ni un milímetro.
Pero ¿me puede definir zurdo de mierda? Que no
todos
lo
los que, digamos, los colectivistas, los que ponen, digamos, o sea, esa idea. A ver,
¿qué, qué le pones de mierda, digamos?
Porque son una mierda. O sea,
pero
si vas, no. Pero
ese,
pero es que
I didn't love this expression.
No, pero si pensás distinto, te van a aniquilar. Ese es el punto. Es decir, vos al zurdo no le podés dar un milímetro, porque le das un milímetro y lo toma para destrozarte. Es decir, usa, digamos, o sea, vos no podés negociar con el zurdo. No se negocia. No se negocia con esa mierda. No se negocia porque te van a llevar puesto.
One of the reasons also why you shouldn't give them a millimeter or something is because it will actually eat it. Whatever is in there, they will eat it. Now.
I love, why do you call them shit leftists? It's like, well, there are reasons.
Let's translate this post because you'll see why Millet was right. I do not know, but isn't it the same Daniel Gomez, the one from Illescas? Look at this guy here.
Sign up or log in to add him as a friend.
Anyway, he is apparently really open about things. He's welcoming the world.
Yeah.
National conservative here says, not satire. Daniel Gomez del Barrio, one of the Spanish Socialist Workers Party,
which is
actually ruling Spain right now.
Yeah.
Sorry, Spain. I mean, you know, has resigned from his elected office as a councillor for Illescas near Madrid over coprophilia.
What does that mean?
Guess.
I mean, philia comes from the Greek word love and friendship.
And
copra comes also from the Greek word for feces.
Right.
And manure.
Something. He's an actual shit leftist.
Yeah, he took pictures of himself eating human feces. I don't know what made him think that was a good idea.
For his scrapbook?
Right. Let's see now what happened. We have here from...
Well, every day you get an exciting politician like this.
Yeah, it's censored. It's censored. But, you know, if viewer discretion is advised.
Everyone took the piss out of George Galloway for pretending to be a cat on Big Brother. Like, it really looks miles by comparison.
Andrew Arena eating your own feces.
Yeah. So it says, gay Spanish politician with left-wing governing party resigns after photos circulate showing him eating his own feces. Again, viewer discretion is advised. There is a blur.
So I want to see the two groups pointing fingers at each other. No, it's because he was a left-winger. No, it's because he's gay. Like, you know, I want to see where the blame lies here.
Well, let's
someone
see.
Someone in the middle being like,
let's see
it's
here.
An intersection.
Of course he was gay and left-wing. That's the whole point.
Well, let's see here, because it's a very rich story.
Oh, I bet. God.
You have a very scatological humor.
No, I don't. It's just, you know, it's just...
Okay, try not to laugh.
Some men, their humor doesn't evolve past the age of 10.
Yeah.
Okay, a gay Spanish municipal councillor has resigned from his position after photos were publicized of him eating his own excrement as part of a scat fetish.
Just to be clear, right? Everyone's like, wow, that's disgusting. And I'm just sat here thinking, wow, I can't believe he resigned. Thank God. We're still in a position where this is a public embarrassment to the left.
Yeah, that's good because you know, sometimes it's good to see the silver lining, the light at the end of the tunnel.
You think if this was John McDonnell that Jeremy Corbyn would have made him resign?
No. Okay.
So, is that worse because he's older?
I don't know, but like, I think he would have stood by him. But like, he's a good communist. He's planned our economic plan.
Diane Abbott does it too.
What he does in his spare time is none of your business.
Daniel Gomez del Barrio served on the council for Illescas, a small town of around 30,000 people just south of the country's capital. He represented PSOE, the main left-wing party in Spain, whose leader is currently the prime minister. In mid-February, so you imagine the setting, a lovely Spanish village, 30,000 people. Everyone sort of knows each other.
Did he get deselected? Spanish Richard Tice is like, well, look, it's not enough for me to kick him out.
Yes. So in mid-February, photos and videos of Gomez were shared that he had posted on social media accounts and pornographic websites. In one video, the councillor, who is in his late 20s, is seemingly naked on the floor and eating his own feces. Just erase seemingly, okay?
Yeah.
Okay, a report from French news source FDS claimed that the politician was offering himself up for sexual use and described himself as wanting to be exposed, humiliated, and degraded.
Mission accomplished.
He also described... He also described his desire to...
Are we taking part in his fetish then? But I don't know.
I don't know. You know, just people should... I don't know. Should they or shouldn't they judge? If they judge,
I think they can
give him what he wants.
I love the idea that this is part of his fetish. Like, he's being degraded on an international level.
It's now. Like Seven.
No, but he's never going to get this kind of, you know...
You remember this is his masterpiece. It's like Seven. You remember the final sin?
Yeah.
Kevin Spacey.
Yeah.
This is his masterpiece. Yeah. A proud career. Okay, he had a desire to
eat Spanish news reporters. I've been doing some research.
CKS, be a her, and be used as a urinal.
Amazing.
Anyway, just, you know, not a very bright fella. Here he says, for instance, he asked to be treated like a coprophagous organism and requested to be the object of sexual actions.
Why have the gay community of Spain all learned, like, deep Latin? I don't know. What does that mean?
Well, it's Greek, but anyway.
I don't know. Well, let's translate.
Hello?
No.
But anyway, he is here. There are more stuff.
Oh, no. I see a face.
Yeah, so I want to say that, okay, this guy was actually having a kind of personal archive, and he was slowly circulating stuff. So he must have named it 120 Days of Turdom or something.
Just, you know, what an idiot. Everyone knows that you don't take photos of yourself doing it.
Right. So I want to say something because there are several commentaries.
Sorry, is this
on
liberal
the
saga? Was like, if you do it in your own room, that's fine.
Oh, no. I think we're going to get to that, actually.
Okay. We're going to get to that. But before we get to that, I want to say that, okay, I'm not talking about necessities here, but the left really does have a transgression problem.
Yeah.
So with a lot of leftists, they just are anti stuff.
Well, you say it's a problem, but isn't that the entire point of being left wing at this point?
Well,
they eat shit.
Yeah, transgress as much as you can. I said, I'm surprised that the boundary is still beyond eating your own feces. Like, because I mean, honestly, in 10 years' time, that's going to happen. They're like, well, you know. Who are you to judge?
Oh, God. Yeah, maybe this is actually a test case.
Yeah, so that's what I mean. At the moment, the tripwire is still sufficiently tight that he had to resign.
Yeah. So just want to say that, I mean, a lot of these people, they just don't stand for anything. They just want to transgress norms. They have fetishes. I mean, how can you explain Queers for Palestine? There's zero long-term thinking.
They
hate so much people in their immediate environment that they just... form an alliance with just anyone.
I think they just really hate Israel, to be honest.
Just stupidity.
I mean, the Queers for Palestine are never going to go to Palestine.
I'll just give you a very random specimen here of just desire for transgression.
Now, I identify as trans and genderqueer, and to me that means I like to play with gender, I like to problematize gender. I like to confront gender norms in how I present and how I move through the world.
So why? That's all the thing.
I just
why
like
would
it,
you do
bro.
That?
I just like it.
I like coloring in books.
Yeah.
So that's all that is.
One thing, this person was involved in on a department in Yescas that had to do with children, the Department for Youth, Children and Family. So again, that's a massive issue with a lot of current leftists. They have really weirdly thinking people in key positions, especially when they address children and education. And, you know, that's why people, things like that should go public and we should be aware of them, apart from the, you know, the scatological aspect.
But you are right. A lot of it is just transgression for the sake of it.
Yeah, because you see here the effects of a whole kind of approach, a very relaxed approach with stuff in Spain. You see here, it's from Radio Genoa when in Spain at Carnival, half-naked children with rainbow flags.
Yeah, I actually really don't like seeing this.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, but things like that are literally what you are going to have if you literally have people in charge of education who are feces-eating.
Leftists, yeah.
Leftists who are just public about it and just, yeah. So there are some considerations about his next move. Potential career.
Sorry, what?
Yeah, people are asking now, what is he going to do afterwards?
All of Spain is glued to their TVs being like, where's he going? What's the next career?
Yeah, so this account here says that gay politician from Spain, the one who ate his poop, has a 10 out of 10 boosie, so we forgive him. So, you know, if you scroll out and see the responses, a lot of people are asking for him to show all kinds of stuff. So there's a market for him if he wants to capitalize on it.
Yeah, he's probably going to make a lot of money on OnlyFans.
Yeah. I really hope he doesn't become a barman for a James Bond movie. Imagine James Bond coming to the bar. This guy asks him, how do you like your vodka martini, sir? Shake and a turd?
No, these are terrible jokes, Stelios.
How many of these did you write for this segment?
Okay, so Ollie London here, far left Spanish politician forced to resign after photos and video emerge. Again, you know, it's just same stuff. And here we are going to talk about Peter Boghossian's response to this. No, that's not exactly it. That's the Leave Britney Alone meme. Okay, so I want to say that I really think that Peter Boghossian has made some claims here that I think are mistaken. And I want to say a bit about it because I don't want to be uncharitable. But I think that in this case...
Peter is a friend of mine, so we're not going to be uncharitable.
Yeah. No, I'm not going to be uncharitable. But I think that his stance here is mistaken. Now, let me tell you what he says. He has two tweets. We're going to talk about it. And we're going to talk about, you know, people who blame liberalism. I'm sure we may have a sort of small clash here or something. But let us see what happened. So Greg retweets the Publica article, says, is there a flag and pronoun for this? And Peter Boghossian says, unpopular opinion, mind your business and leave the guy alone.
Right.
And then Peter Boghossian is reacting against some of the responses. And he says, the comments here are not merely authoritarian. They demonstrate pervasive normative rigidity that comes from Christian fear of judgment, the downside of Western supremacy mindset. Anyway, we'll talk about them extensively because I think here is where the interesting part is. So when it comes to the first tweet, unpopular opinion, mind your own business and leave the guy alone, I won't say that I agree with a lot of the things that Peter Boghossian says.
Yeah, he's a very smart chap. And completely correct on every issue.
I wanted to write something clarifying this and actually defending this, what I think the spirit of what he says, but I don't know exactly what that spirit is, to be honest. Because there are interpretations of this claim that make sense. So for instance, when we're talking about mind your own business and leave the guy alone, this could either be interpreted in a legal sense.
Sure.
Which means, well, he may be a poop-eating person and that doesn't mean you're going to put him to jail.
Sure.
Is anyone suggesting that?
And the,
I don't think it's a crime.
And the moral aspect. The leave this guy alone, don't judge.
We could revisit that point as well. Maybe that should be a crime.
Well,
I don't even want to be thinking about these.
No, I don't either, but since it's come up.
Yeah, so I want to say that when it comes to the mind your own business and leave the guy alone, obviously this is a question when it comes to the political sphere and the legal sphere. Yep. There's a question of, you know, where you draw the line. Yep. Any kind of law requires that we draw the line somewhere. And lots of laws are interpreted in a very abstract manner, and they have to be applied in a very concrete flesh and blood context.
Mm-hmm.
And there's always this need for interpreting the law. That's why there's a whole idea of
inquiry
about the spirit of the law.
Nobody's brought up the law, though, right? Because no one's actually saying, well, he's broken a law, even though, shockingly, that's not violation of law. The issue seems to be more making judgments.
Right? Well, if that's the case, then I think that's a mistake on him. Because just making judgment that could be interpreted as, let's say, morally shaming in this case, it's not necessarily authoritarian.
No.
Authoritarianism has to do with a particular category that is used when we're talking about relations between governed and the governor.
Yeah, and I think it's a...
Rulers and rule.
Go on.
We shouldn't have people eating shit in charge of the government. Oh, here comes the far right. Okay.
Okay, so what I find interesting about this is just, I think it's a warranted situation that we should make judgments upon.
Yes.
Sometimes, is it warranted to make a judgment on such a thing? I think when an elected politician is filming himself and uploading it to the internet, to presumably solicit other gay men, maybe we can make judgments at that point.
There is nothing authoritarian in having a civil society that exerts considerable moral pressure.
At least over the kind of feces.
Yes, and I mean,
if I steel man this as much as possible and say, well, it's a sexual fetish, therefore are you saying anyone who has sexual fetishes that they post publicly shouldn't be in office? I think that's something actually we could agree upon. Like, if you've got politicians actively posting about their sexual fetishes in public, no?
Yeah, but...
Just don't do that. Just have it private.
It's not that hard. I agree with you. Definitely agree with you. And, you know, the character of politicians is incredibly important. And there is a kind of attempt to sort of normalize a lot of stuff that, you know, you would consider to be deviant. Because a lot of the people from these communities want extra power, and they think that right now they couldn't, let's say, run for office, at least if their inclinations.
You're not oppressed by not wearing the dog mask in public.
Yeah.
Like, this isn't an avenue of oppression. No,
I agree with you. And here is where, you know, there is, I think Peter Boghossian is mistaken that there has to be a kind of considerable moral pressure, because there has to be a kind of participation of the public in discussion with respect to where to draw the line. And just say, no, sorry, eating shit is unacceptable behavior.
Seems a bit beyond the line.
Yeah. Especially when they are in head of a department for education, children, and the family.
Especially...
Imagine him giving a speech on family values. I mean, it's just...
But Peter's followed it up here by saying, I see the authoritarians are out en masse. If his constituents disapprove, they will vote him out. Meanwhile, I'm sure there are more substantive issues that you could
voted for a shit eater. Even if you didn't know, he should stink.
But meanwhile, someone gets an infection and can't run for office.
But I just feel there's something of a category error here, because... Like, to say that if your constituents disapprove of your behavior in office implies public corruption, right? Or public choices when it comes to policy. And so, okay, yeah, I mean, you know, I don't like the way that he set the, like, Sadiq Khan's ULEZ tax or whatever. So, yeah, I'm going to vote him out of the next election, because that's the democratic process, because it's about the governance of the public area. But this...
If local man who became politician, I don't know, Sadiq Khan came out and said, by the way, I don't do any paedophilia, but I'm really, that's what turns me on. We're not waiting for the next election. He's got
to
go.
I'm allowed to make a judgment, and it's not authoritarian.
Yeah.
Right? That's the point. But the point is, like, okay, this is a question of character, right? It's
the
character of people.
Hasn't committed a crime, but he is.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, let's just use this particular example. This guy enjoys eating feces in his spare time and wants to be degraded. Okay, well, I don't think it's authoritarian to make a moral judgment about that, actually, and I'm going to make a moral judgment about it because it's disgusting.
It's not only it's disgusting, it's destructive for the community. It's a terrible... It actually contributes to tyranny. And I say because... Please, listen to this argument that when you are interested in arguing for a position or a system that is a social one, you're interested in the level of morality that will sort of function as a mediator between, you know, rampant private interest and the needs of the community. Mm-hmm. If someone thinks that being degraded is a good thing, then they shouldn't be a leader because they think that their community being degraded is a good thing.
Well, even if they were to say, well, no, look, I may eat feces in my own personal time, but trust me, your food's going to be 99.99% feces free. I'll put in regulations to guarantee it. There's got to be a measure of imperfection there. But trust me, you can trust me with the good care of your feces free food, even though I regularly eat it. A, I don't know if I necessarily trust that guy, but B, the problem is the example that it's setting, right? As in, there's the sort of charisma of the office of an elected official, which makes them an exemplar, or that's the way we judge them, of behavior. And so when they do something, I mean, this is why sex scandals were always something that would bring down politicians. This is why honey traps are a thing, because it's like, no, that's a bad example you're setting to other people who in some way are supposed to look up to you, because the office itself has a kind of authority and charisma. Power over people.
Heterosexual man cheats on wife. Get rid of him.
Yeah, yeah. Spanish leftist eats poo. And hang on, guys. Maybe we shouldn't judge. I don't necessarily agree at all with Peter's take here. No, I really respect Peter and all the work he does outside of this. Like, I just don't know why he's conflated these two things.
Yeah. No, I think that basically when we are talking about leadership, we need to be very, let's say, strict about it.
Yeah, yeah.
And the morals of leaders need to be, let's say, a very important question on debate, because they are the people who will represent the community. Hmm. Now, if you have a value
Jeremy
system...
Jeremy Corbyn is just like he's a really good guy. Yeah. He's the magic grandpa, but he likes shooting puppies in his spare time. He buys the puppies, didn't steal them or anything. He just then blasts them in the head.
I mean,
but it's nothing to do with this public policy. You'd be like, no.
I mean, not only this, but when you have politicians with such a weird value system,
yeah,
think that being degraded is something that they desire.
Yeah.
Well, no, sorry, I don't want you to run my community because you will want my community to be degraded, and I don't want that.
Was he actually in charge of like families and stuff?
Well, they are saying that he was in that municipality of Viescas in a department that had to do with education, children, and the family.
It really does call into question his morality in other areas.
Yes, and let me just say this. People being non-judgmental within civil society is actually contributing to the disintegration of the morals of civil society. There's nothing authoritarian about exercising strong moral judgment within the confines. The authoritarianism bit is a category that is used whenever we're talking about the relationships between the governed and the governed.
Yeah, this is the wrong way around. This is the people who are being governed making judgments about the government.
So if we take this into a moral sense that exercising judgment is authoritarian, then we're not talking about liberty. We're talking about license.
Yeah. But even then, I think that's not a fair characterization. If the people who don't have any power over the politician, other than in 3 years' time or whatever, we're going to vote him out, I think that they can't be tyrannical to the politician by definition, because they don't hold any power. So any amount of judgment they make isn't going to be authoritarian towards that guy anyway. He is the authority figure. Why are we like diving in front of this guy? He's the one in power. It's his behavior that's the problem. Yeah. Like, this isn't just a private person who is just like disgusting, but just, you know.
And I want to say one thing, because a lot of people have also received comments. I've also talked to Connor a bit about this.
Oh yeah, bears of that.
Yes, I know. Yeah, that it is the case that every system is prone to, let's say, corruption.
Yeah.
That's just as old as history. Read some Polybius if you want. Any system is, but especially systems with decentralized power and a wide public sphere, they require much more participation of the public within public discussion, but also you know, public life. So that means that if you want to defend a system like the one that the West is supposed to have, I think that, you know, that's another conversation.
But
if you want to defend liberalism, you have to defend a much more active and judgmental public.
Yeah.
Not the idea that, you know, just anything goes, don't judge. No, you need to judge more.
With you on that.
And as a friend of mine tells me, you know what they say, we are what we eat.
Your jokes on this segment have been atrocious. Perfect dad joke segment.
Go to the video comments.
So the cherry blossoms are now falling. It's absolutely beautiful. And it's this time of year that really makes you appreciate being in Japan. Absolutely love it.
It's very pretty.
It's fun to go back to books written on matters scientific that are still not fully resolved today. It's a window on the way we used to think and how the ideas we have now were formulated from what came before. John Gribbin's In Search of the Edge of Time is an accessible read that sets out to explain the fundamentals of gravity and the conceptual leaps from the Newtonian world to the Einsteinian vision, building to a model of how time interacts with space. However, the real leap for me was in this video from YouTuber Astrum that instantly explained to me the dilation of objects as they approach the speed of light.
Go on then, physicist, explain it.
No.
Oh, okay.
Boring and people won't get it. So
I don't get it.
Look up Lorentz equations if you ever want to actually do it. It's pretty funny. There's this one experiment. All right, I'm going to do it now. Okay.
Go on.
This is one thing you have to do in university where, okay, I've got a shed and the shed is 5 meters long. Okay, and I've got a ladder and it's 10 meters long.
Yeah.
So the ladder won't fit in the shed, only half of it will. So what I've got to do is I've got to make the ladder move at what percentage of speed of light until it's 5 meters long?
Really? Because things get smaller as they get faster?
From the perspective of the ladder, it sees the shed getting bigger. Mm-hmm. But from the perspective of the shed, the ladder gets smaller.
Right.
So if we make the ladder go like 96% or whatever, you can fit the ladder in.
Hardly a storage solution, though, is it?
Well, one of these days we'll figure it out.
Well, I mean, you know, okay, I had to put it at whatever millions of miles an hour to get it into the shed.
Yeah.
But then I want to leave it in the shed. Well, so surely it gets bigger again.
As long as it stays at that speed, it's fine.
Well, it's not going, because I'm going to leave it in the shed.
It goes in a circle.
Like time is cyclical.
Yeah.
Like the Terminator.
But if I remember correctly, so it makes you, if you go to the speed of light, you get shorter. I think you get heavier, and also time travel just happens. Everything around you, everything else goes fast, and you stay at speed.
I time travel every day. I'm not worried about that.
Like actual time travel.
Where you actually going into the future.
Yeah.
Every day I go into the future.
But imagine if you could go 20 years into the future.
I will in 20 years' time.
Oh, for God's sakes. Anyway, it's pretty useless, unless you're doing quantum stuff. But
yeah,
it was. Let's go to the next one.
Here's another wildlife video for you guys today. That's a turtle. I'm not sure what kind of a turtle. I did take a class on herpetology in college, but unfortunately I don't remember a whole lot, so I definitely need to revise on that. Yeah, he's a really cute little guy.
I'm pretty sure that's a terrapin.
It's a wholesome video.
It is a very wholesome video. I think it's the stripe on the thing. I don't think it's actually a turtle, but I'm no expert. So feel free to correct me in the comments.
All right, let's go to the next one.
You know, I've walked many circles. I got friends who are tent-dwelling hippies that live in the forest. And I've gone as far up the social ladder as dating into an exiled family of Iranian nobility thrown out by Khomeini. And word of advice, don't. And what I've noticed is the blue-collar guys, the electrician, the guy at the body shop, they're all very literate. You could have excellent conversations with about morality or just governance. And broadly speaking, most of the upper-class people I've dealt with are completely illiterate rubes, concerned only with playing increasingly granular social status games with each other. Really, it's just the third-generation wealth thing. It's been 3 generations since the Industrial Revolution and its new aristocracy. And we're just the schmuck stuck holding a bag. Neat.
Alrighty.
Nice car.
Do we have more?
Yeah, there was a nice car. But I don't know. I mean, the sort of the upper class people I've met have been able to hold a conversation on these things. Maybe it's an American thing.
To explain what happened yesterday in the Bay Area, protesters were blocking traffic going into San Francisco, and then the police blocked traffic going north to get rid of them. So it was completely blocked off. And then in Oakland, there was a group that was blocking the Port of Oakland entrance, and there was also a group here that was also blocking traffic going northbound. And then there was another group down here that was blocking traffic going southbound. And then later in the evening, there was a group at the Tesla factory right here that was blocking it.
I will talk about Oakland in the next few days.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so
I don't actually know what happened there. So
it's wild.
Oh, is it? Okay. Can't believe I missed it.
Thanks, California refugee.
Yeah, yeah. That's good. Good little map. Bleach Demon says, the attack on the Christian priest exemplifies how inviting and protecting a certain culture can act negatively without consequence. It erodes the secular government's ability to rule, even to the point where the facade of the separation of church and state seems like suppression of Christianity rather than stopping the establishment of an official state religion. I just can't get over just how obviously terrified these people are. It's like, why do we bring in loads of people you're scared of? Is that wise? Why was that done?
GDP.
Yeah, yeah. Are they contributing? The Shadow Band says, how is stabbing a Christian while shouting Allahu Akbar not a hate crime? Imagine a Christian shouting stabbing an imam shouting Deus Vult. That's a good point, actually. Why isn't that counted as a hate crime?
It's the double standard.
Yeah, yeah, it is. Yeah, that's a fair point. David says, many of the suburbs surrounding Wakely, where the stabbing occurred, have large Lebanese Muslim populations. While working as a security guard in that area of Sydney, we were told that if we had to take the train home late night after work, we should wear plain jackets over our uniforms so we wouldn't be attacked by the adherents of the religion of peace. Suddenly you can see why the Assyrian Christians are a bit more on edge and patrolling of the borders, you know, than ours are. Michael says, multiculturalism does work exactly as expected. It's designed to create conflict, hatred, and racism, so we fight amongst ourselves instead of realizing who's actually sitting carving out our countries. There's evidence by Harry's recent segments where he showed council gnomes earning hundreds of thousands for a month's work. Yes, I suppose that is true. Yes, I suppose the main problem of me characterizing, well, it doesn't work. No, it does. It's just this is what it's meant to do. It's not really a desirable outcome, is it? Kevin says, when are the MSM and judiciary going to roll out the mental illness trope about the stabber? To be honest, I think they'd be right to do so. If you believe in Islam and all this barbarism and misogyny, you have to be mentally deficient. That is a point. I don't want to get the same treatment, so I'm not going to make any further comments on it. Malicious Compliance says, question, what do you think of the idea of suing the government for causing material damages to everyone in the country from inflation due to the printing of money? Any thoughts?
I was thinking about Jews. No, for a good reason. I was thinking about what religion I'd like to be, given all the religious conflict.
Right.
And I thought Jewish. Have you seen the thing about the tent poles?
No.
So apparently in an area of New York, because on the Sabbath, you're not meant to leave the house. But obviously, it's like you're in the big city. You got to leave, right?
Right.
So what they do is they have these ropes going all around this huge area of New York.
Right.
And legally speaking, according to the chief rabbi, that means that that area is indoors, even though you're obviously not. So every single Saturday or whatever, they go down and check the tent poles to make sure none of them are damaged. And that means all the Jews can enjoy and go about their business.
I've seen videos of people, Jewish people, doing this as if you can trick God.
Yeah.
I don't understand the philosophy behind this.
I was thinking about that, and it made sense in the sense of that's mad. You can't trick God. But if you genuinely believed in that religion, that seems like the best one to go for.
Sure. But like, do they think God's just sat there going, well, I mean, I did set the rule that they've got me. They've got me again. Like,
Damn, yet again.
I saw one about the apparently they can't turn on lights during the Sabbath or something.
You can't use fire. So electricity is fire. So
no, it's not. But anyway, never mind. Okay. I'm not the physicist. But the point is that it was an advert for something where they like, no, it's just on all the time. So you just lift it up and it was on from yesterday. So you can close the lamp down to cover the light when you want to go to sleep. And it's like, God's just like, yeah, okay, yeah, fair enough. I've got to give it to you.
Have you seen Jewish elevators?
No.
They're amazing. So they're constantly going. They're just always, you just jump on and then get off.
How many deaths a year does that cause?
Ah, none. They're actually pretty good. But if you get your pram trapped, I mean, your kid is getting crushed.
Yeah. We have some super chats that I missed. The Shadow Band for $10 says, I'm glad Stelos is still part of the Lotuses team. I missed my symposium fix yesterday, but thank you for the body of philosophical work you did put out.
Thank you.
Well, I'm sure that more good stuff is coming. Isn't it? Better be. Neo Realist says, the Assyrian Christians are looking back in anger. Have they not been assimilated into our superior Western apathy to heinous atrocities? No. Weirdly, people from the Middle East are sensitive about those things. I mean, they must look at us like we're mad. It's like, okay, Manchester Arena bomber blows up. And they're like, okay, so what are you going to do about it? I mean, we're going to forgive him. We're going to make sure that the Muslim community is safe.
My Serbian friends think that you're just stupid. Like, the whole
obviously
should be killed because it's worthless. As in, like, well, if the British aren't going to fight back after that, then who cares about them?
Yeah. Nirula says, the Assyrian Christians surviving intact as a community despite living surrounded by Muslims in all directions for over 1,000 years speaks to having to be hard as nails. Yeah, the Assyrians have pretty much always been hard as nails, to be honest. But they have been persecuted for the last 1,400 years by the Muslims. So, but apparently there are something like 3 to 5 million of them. So no, they're not necessarily a tiny group. OPHUK says, after 1,400 years of jihad, but if we give them passports, they'll turn into good little Westerners. Seems like an obviously stupid idea in retrospect. Well, I mean, you just need to think about... Yeah, if you'd put it like that in advance, it would have seemed stupid. But just think of the magic soil, right? Just think of the magic soil. The magic soil, they'll arrive in the West and be like, yeah, you know what? I may well think that Muhammad was a prophet of God, but have we tried this liberalism stuff? You know, John Locke was just some dude. Well, John Stuart Mill, he was just some dude. Give him a listen. Not just a string says, shows pretty well how bad DEI is, given how quickly it's unraveling. Even transgender ideology has held on longer. But nobody understands how big and complicated the economy is. Meritocracy is necessity. I always wonder just how, like, there must be a study that can be done that calculates the amount of money we spend on DEI and the amount that that would have, if spent productively, boosted the economy by. That must be doable. Right? It's like, why isn't that done? Well, actually, we know why that's done. Sophie says, reminds me of when there was a time in China where Chinese companies would hire a white guy. Not to do anything, just to be a white guy in the building visitors would see on a visit. It was all about the prestige of having the company look good so a white guy would work there. This actually happened.
Yeah, you don't know about that.
No.
They're called white guy jobs. So when they're selling, because you know
I'm here working like a chump when I could have just been a white guy in China.
So in China, obviously, it's dying now because it's hitting its ass. But they used to invest all their money in property, which is why they build so much property that nobody lives in.
Yeah, yeah.
Just to hold value because the whole system is buggered. So when they were building a new series of apartment blocks and then they needed the investors to be impressed and be like, no, this isn't going to become a ghost city. This will actually...
We've got Greg.
Yeah, we got Greg. They hired Greg and they put Greg in a grenadier outfit, you know, the beef eater.
Yeah.
And had Greg walk around as if British people actually walk around like that. He's looking at buying property. You know, he's serious because he's got one of them British outfits.
You can tell because he's a beef eater.
Yes. You know, he's rich because he looks like the soldiers.
He looks like he guards the queen. I mean,
yeah, seriously.
That's hilarious.
There's a good video, I think, from the Wall Street Journal on it where they hired Greg and then Bonsoir got paid to walk around like a mime. Because look, French guy.
How are we not making this money?
Well, I don't know why we're not doing it with our own foreigners. You know, just, hey, Chinese guy, put on this lampshade and help us sell the apartments. John's winking at me. you want to do some moonlighting, my friend?
I mean, just saying, it's easy money, surely. Freddie sends $20 and says, love Peter, but notice monetized accounts make controversial comments at times. I've tried to quit feeding fire. Of course, I did chime in, but Posey Parker was the best response as usual. I didn't actually see Posey's response. But I don't think Peter would be farming for clicks, right?
No, I don't think either. But
I don't think he's that kind of guy. So maybe I should DM him, be like, Pete, what's going on, man?
Did you say Freddie sent that super chat?
Yes.
Freddie65.
Why?
Don't ask.
Don't tell him.
Okay. Nero List again says, people in lunatic asylums eat their own shit. I don't think it's overly judgmental to have a lower opinion of a man who chooses to eat shit as recreation. I actually think it's obligatory. And, you know, like, people tend to have a lower opinion of you if you don't judge those people for doing that, because it's really disgusting and weird. Omar says, shame is the immune system of a healthy society. Peter is being literal cultural AIDS. We are literally judging a public figure on the content of his character. What else are we supposed to judge him with? Well, I mean, he's Spanish, so that's always a black mark. just joking, Spaniards. Hope not hate. I don't hate every person in Spain. That was just a joke. But
including the British who are there in Spain.
Well, they're the okay ones.
No, they're not.
Yeah, they
if they're not in Gibraltar, I'm no.
Right. Oh, right, right, right. Oh, right, right. You mean the sort of expats.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, they're
Shagaloof, Tenerife.
Yeah, to be honest with you, I love it when the left are like, oh, we left the EU, so what? So should the Spaniards just kick out all the Brits? I say, yeah.
Go for it.
Yeah, I don't care. I'd teach them.
You wouldn't have any money.
Yeah, exactly. But also, you know. Anne says, thanks for the white pill, Stelios. I think you had to dig deep in this one to find that. But I'm sure the media have tried to flush this story. God, that's just terrible.
We also had another donation by Freddy65.
Yeah.
Thank you. Says, it's an old, but people saying, do your business, referring to bowels movement. I completely forget that. Is Peter trolling us?
No, because he followed up with further on this. But John says,
all the fucking people as well, to be like, I stand with the shit eater. Peter Bogosian.
Peter's a really normal, sensible guy. So I don't know what is inspiring him to do this.
Behind closed doors, though, if you check his Grindr account.
I doubt it.
That's what I mean. Like, unless...
Like, I really doubt it. He's a married... Well, he's divorced now, but he was, you know, married father. He's not thinking that.
No,
I'm also so confused. Like, it makes no sense.
I also doubt it. It's just... I think it's more of a philosophical approach.
Maybe, but I can't...
This is what philosophy does to a mother, I feel like.
John says, well, it's at least nice to see Stelios having fun.
Thank you.
Charlie says, this Spanish politician is the embodiment of you are what you eat. Anon Imi says, so is it possible that guy has a parasite that alters his behavior to eat the poo-poo, spread the parasite, toxoplasmosis from cat feces, alters the behavior of human women, for example?
Ivermectin.
Yeah, I know, right? But I mean, that can't be the case.
I mean, you remember Dankula was the one who told us that theory, right?
Yeah.
But it obviously falls down with, well, if you're not gay, why are you having gay sex to get the gay parasite? That doesn't...
Yeah, how did you get it? Yeah. If you got it from the cows. I mean, I don't know anything. This is not scientifically informed, just to let people know. I have no idea how this all works.
I have no idea how the gay parasite got me. I just woke up gay.
Justin says, that scatter graph that you're talking about did show a larger proportion of results that were in the lower profitability section, but the largest changes were in the higher profitability. So it's likely the outcome of diversity hiring is a small decrease in profitability, though it could work out. Well, the line going across was like basically on zero. It was like basically nothing's changed. Why do we do this all again? Well, at least we're moral. Lord Nerevar says, it's fascinating how an industry like BLM can arise in our current system. Ignoring how obviously and objectively evil they are for a moment, the societal, governmental, and economic system we have grown in and evolved in such a way that a parasite like BLM actually has the room in the market to grow and leech off other more productive businesses. An organization whose sole purpose is to steal, all technically within the law, like the tapeworm.
No one's ever said that.
Sorry?
That tapeworm is stealing my food. No.
Well, the thing is, Black Lives Matter didn't actually steal anything. I don't even know if they actually grifted. Because their entire thing was, hey, you need to give black people money. And the people running these corporations were like, yeah, you're right. I do have way too much money in my pockets and I need to give black people things. So here you go. And they were like, thanks. I'm going to go buy a mansion. Everyone's like, yeah, that's what we thought you were going to do. And so I'm not even sure it's a grift.
Hypnosis almost.
Yeah, it's more like a sort of magic spell. It's like, I'm black, give me money. And they're like, yeah, good point, you are.
I'm American.
Yeah, what just happened here? As someone who's not American, I'm just like, okay, that's weird. But the Australians have got the same sort of thing with the Aborigines. It's just like, you know, you've just got to, because they're Aborigines, you have to do stuff. It's like, do I? I don't know. I didn't feel that way about anyone. It's like the Scots are like, I'm Scottish, get bent. I'm going to give you any money.
What are you doing in London anyway?
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, we don't have that relationship with the other people of our country. So it's just like, it's weird seeing you guys have that relationship with yours. Just don't know what to make of it. George says, if the shit eater is not doing anything wrong, what's the issue of it being public and subject to scrutiny? Peter Boghossian's takes always seem to defend degeneracy like the Canadian teacher with fake tits. I say he's possessed by a Sineshi demon. Well, I haven't seen that. But again, it was just very strange. North Blood says, auction house selling black trading cards. I've got three fine-looking diversity, all strong and hardworking. I hear $5 for the opening bid. So up your alley there, Callum.
I like gambling. You gamble on slaves? Was that a thing?
No, you could. It's not gambling. It's bidding.
No, but you know, I have horse races now. Like, if we were back in the good old slave days.
No, you wouldn't gamble on them.
I'd gamble on them.
Who's
going to pick the most cotton? It's just.
No, that's not how that works.
Oh, it's boring in the South. They've got to find something to do.
I'm sure they had lots of things to do. But they were bidding.
Yeah.
Can I end by saying thank you to a commenter? Henry, yes. Asselin says, Stelios, good Scarface outfit. Thank you very much.
Alrighty. There's also a $100 super chat from Blood for the Blood God just saying happy birthday to me, which...
Is it?
Thanks.
Is it your birthday?
Yes.
Oh, happy birthday. I didn't know. Why don't you say something?
Happy birthday.
Well, on that note, it's time to end the show. So.
We actually have another super chat from Freddie. oh, no, you got it. It's all right.
All right. Bye.